Well, I had a plan for what I was going to say, but I thought that I should do something a bit different. So I've done a little bit of reworking and rethinking over the last couple of days about what I might talk about. So there are definitely very much things I'm still thinking of and in the midst of. So a little fresher, for better or for worse. So we're going to talk a little bit about faith, waiting, and disappointment. And then also the stories that we tell about ourselves and about God, which I think are really connected to faith and to disappointment and to waiting. All those things I think are quite closely tied to each other. But before we start, I thought I'd have everybody take a moment and write down, if you don't have a pen and paper, that's okay, you can just think of it. But write down something that you're waiting for. It could be something very small or it could be something very big. But something that right now in your life you're waiting for. Okay, hopefully you can kind of hold on to that as we talk about waiting and think about that thing. So it's something specific that you have in your mind. Otherwise, sometimes big topics like this can become really general and not feel like, oh, that's not necessarily attached to my regular everyday life. So there are lots of types of waiting, as I'm sure you all know. So waiting in line, waiting in traffic, waiting for exam scores. Some summers when we've come here, there's been lots of people waiting for their exams. Not anymore, but waiting for a hike to finish. Some people felt that yesterday. They were like, when is this ever gonna finish? Maybe never. Waiting for the perfect job. Waiting for a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a spouse. Waiting for friends. Waiting for your future to come together, to pan out. Waiting for direction in life. So there's so many types of waiting, lots of types of waiting. Our lives are full of waiting. And what we do in that waiting matters to God, and it changes us. So I think that's actually the most important thing, that what we do in the waiting matters to God, and it changes us. So, actually, would you mind getting the door? Would that be okay? Thanks. So you have to be careful about what topics that you agree to speak on or offer to speak on. I first, when I was 28, was asked to talk on waiting. I was going to a conference in Colorado Springs, and somebody said, would you mind talking on waiting? I said, okay, I'll talk on waiting. And before I planned to talk on waiting, things were going excellent in my life, like coasting along really well. And suddenly when I agreed to talk on waiting, things came to a halt. All sorts of things came to a halt. I had a relationship come to the halt. My future plans shifted. And then I got very sick, which some of you guys have heard about for a little bit. For a long time, I was sick for 10 months. And we didn't know I was sick. It turns out it was Lyme's disease, but I didn't know that for a long time. And so at the height of it, I could hardly walk around. I was in lots of pain, and I didn't know I was so sick. And here I have this upcoming talk on waiting. And I'm waiting at doctor's appointments, I'm just waiting all the time. And thinking, waiting for applications to come back. And thinking, will I ever feel better? I'm not sure, I wasn't sure at the time. And will the waiting end? And I didn't know. So I quickly went from thinking on waiting to having this very experiential understanding of waiting. I felt like, okay, now I get waiting in a new way. Not just waiting in traffic, but life waiting. So I think it was the first time in my life that I realized that the way that I waited mattered. That it was, that waiting wasn't passive, but active. And that what I did in the waiting would determine who I become. I had not thought about that before. Because I was waiting for so long. I was sick for 10 months, which is a long time to be waiting. And I couldn't work for most of the time. And so I started thinking, wow, this period is going to determine who I am later in my life. So that's just something, that's kind of a little bit of my background on waiting, but obviously I'm not the only one that waits. And there are a lot of stories in the Bible of people waiting. So in the last couple days, I've just been looking at Abraham's family and how many experiences of waiting there were with Abraham alone, and there are several. So we're gonna take a look at four very briefly, and then we'll kind of hone in on one and just spend most of the time talking about one of those experiences of waiting. So is there someone that could just turn to Genesis 12, 1 to 3? We have various Bible passages. Genesis 12, 1 to 3. Yeah, a few things.
Genesis 12, 1 to 3. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed."
Okay, great, thank you. So this is Abram's call. This, you probably have that heading on your Bible, if you have Bible headings. The call of Abram. So we see already a couple kinds of waiting. The Lord says, leave your country and your people and your father's household. And so Abram finds himself waiting to go to this future place. He's waiting for a future that hasn't happened yet. Abram, I guess, is waiting for his future. He's waiting for his future to come, which I think for university students is a very common feeling. Like, I'm waiting. I was in school for like forever, as some people will tell you that know me well, 10 years, 12 years, something like that, with graduate school. So it felt like I was waiting for ages to finally get a job that paid, waiting a long time for the future. So that's the first type of waiting for the future. A second one we have is Sarai, which is Genesis 11, 29 to 30. Could someone read that for us? Really quickly, someone could read Genesis 11, 29 to 30. Just a page back. Yeah, thank you.
Abram and Noah. Oh no, I can't read all these names.
Noah.
Abram and Noah took wives. Abram's wife is named Sarai, and Noah's wife is named Milcah. Mm-hmm. She was the daughter of Haran and the father of both Milcah and Ishka. Sarai was barren and had no children.
Okay, and we're going to spend a lot of time on that verse, actually, verse 30. But so Sarai is waiting for a child. Okay, very clearly. So that's the thing she's waiting for. Okay, third character waiting is Hagar, and that's Genesis 16, 1 through 6. Someone can read that.
16,
1
through
6.
Yeah, thank you.
Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. Now she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Abraham agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abraham had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai and his wife took their Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abraham, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai ill-treated Abram, so she fled from him.
Okay, I'm just going to go a few verses further. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from? Where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she answered. And we'll stop there for now. We'll hear a little bit more of the story later. So Sarai is waiting for provision. Okay, she finds herself hated by her mistress. And so she's running away. She has no one to help her. And this becomes a theme in her life. It happens again another time, where she's out by herself with no one to help her, so she's waiting for provision. Okay, the last story is of Jacob. It's Genesis 29:18 to 25. Yes, you know. Thank you.
Jacob was in love with, is that right?
Yeah.
Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you for 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay here with me." So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but it seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is completed and I want to lie with her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. And Laban gave his servant girl Zilpah to his daughter as her maidservant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?"
Okay, so I find that to be a really intriguing story. So Jacob works for 7 years to get a wife, a particular wife, and then he wakes up the morning after his wedding and finds out he's gotten a different wife. A very interesting way. He ends up having to wait longer. So Jacob is waiting for a spouse, and he's waiting a really long time for a spouse, okay? That's his wait. So we have a future, a child, a provision, and a spouse. I think sometimes it's easy to see stories in the Bible as being somebody else's stories, but actually these are our stories, and many of the same things that we're waiting for are these things. So I plan to talk mostly on Abram, which is why you read about him, but I kept coming back to that one verse on Sarai. So the verse 11:30, Genesis 11:30. For some reason, it sort of rung for me. I just can't get it out of my mind all week. So I've been looking at it and just going over it. It's a really short verse, but I think we'll spend a little bit of time there. The verse 11, Genesis 11, verse 30. Now Sarai was barren; she had no children. So what is it about this verse? So I started to think, why is this verse sounding so loudly in my ear here? So first thing I thought a little bit about was the context of the verse. So this is closer to the start of people, maybe the start of the world. There's some different context there. And first, in that children were security. So children were a way of providing for yourself. But they were also the only way that you live on. So there was like a real threat of people dying out if people didn't have children. So there was a sense of that if you didn't have kids, you could lose everything. And I was trying to think of some sort of analogy, and the only analogy I could think of is like a computer crashing. So probably some of you, has anyone had their computer crash? Lost some files? Yes. So now thankfully it's like the days of backup disks and the cloud and all sorts of things. But when I was at university, not that long ago, Sarah was there too at the same time, there wasn't quite all of that. And I remember one time in university, my computer just died. I was like working on it and then it just turned off on me. And I lost all of my files. And I remember thinking, because I'm a writer. This is what I do. So I lost all of my work. And I was thinking, wow, there's a great fear at this time that not only could you lose like all your work, but you could lose everything. Everything you've done would be lost if you don't have children. They're the only way to carry it on. But I think, the whole thing could disappear. But I think it was even stronger for women, and maybe actually it still is. There's a great shame for women because women's role, kind of main role, was to have children. So there's a lot of pressure on women to have children. And it was thought to be all in the women. So if you didn't have a child, it was thought to be the woman's problem then. So I think actually there's still, in some ways, this being barren is still a conversation. I was in the UK for a couple weeks right before I came here. And there was like a prime minister race head to head. And one of the reasons it seems that the prime minister that came in, Theresa May, was there was this kind of her rival accused her of being less prepared for office because she didn't have children, because she's barren. And so even then, it was on the news right before I arrived. There's still this conversation. So women are still, I mean, it backfired. Theresa May became prime minister, but there's still this kind of shame attached to not having children. But I think it's more than that. So when we look at this verse, this is the first defining trait for Sarai in the Bible. So Sarai was barren is the very first thing you read about her. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that this was probably the defining trait for her life. My sense is that probably her disappointment defined her. And so this is the first thing we read about her, and it's the first thing that people probably talked about when they thought about her. So just going even a little bit further into this one verse, I don't have a lot of Hebrew knowledge, but a little bit. And the word for barren in the Hebrew here is the word agar, A-G-A-R, agar, which is not actually that common of a word to use for being childless. There's other words that can be used too. And this word has a couple of different definitions. And the first one is torn. And then the second one is like emptied by force, forcefully emptying something. And then the third one, and the one that Bible commentators think was being used, is ripped out by force, by the roots. So it's being torn out by the roots. So it's like a really violent way for talking about somebody being childless. So the idea is that it's like her womb was like ripped out of her, is the image that was there. So it's like this super strong, violent phrase. So she was so defined by this. So I just want to think, I'm going to stop a couple times during this talk. Think for a few minutes. So we've already talked about waiting, but are there any weights or disappointments in your life that have defined you? So Sarai is clearly defined by this disappointment of not having children. Any disappointments that have defined you? Just take a minute and think on it. If you're having trouble thinking, just to give you a few examples, I have a friend who never married and is in her 50s and is defined by the fact that she was never married. She doesn't want to become a cat lady or like a sort of old single woman, but she feels defined by that. Or I know a guy that's had a hard time getting a job and has been defined by that, sort of waiting for the job and having a hard time finding the right thing, and that feels like it's defined him. Sometimes it's just for a season, sometimes it's longer. So the story continues on for Sarai and for Abraham. So she's 20 and then 25 and then 30 and then 50 and then 75, and she has no child. So she still has no child. So I'm going to write here. This is my teacher's side coming up a little bit. So what I'm going to say is I'm going to call the cycle of disappointment, okay? There is a cycle of disappointment that begins. Yeah, that's great. Thanks. So first thing we've already talked about, and I'll just draw this up here so you can see it, is that she's defined by disappointment, okay? So I'll just put defined by disappointment. So that's the first thing. We already saw that in the very first section of scripture. She's defined by disappointment. So I'll just kind of push this forward. So we're going to read on a little bit and see what else happens for her. So Genesis 16, 1-5, we've already read, but I want to look at, we've read it in context of Hagar, and I want to look at it this time in context of Sarai, okay? So now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. Once again, it keeps repeating. If you look at the several verses, first verses in Sarai, almost every time she's mentioned, it's like, and she had no children. So there's this kind of repeated thing. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. So listen to that. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. So notice we first blamed God. God hasn't given me any kids. And then we've tried something else, tried to fix the circumstance, and now Abram's responsible. Okay, so we have a couple of things going on. So in this cycle, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. So the second thing is she's defined by her disappointment. Second thing is she tries to fix her circumstances. So I'll show you that. She tries to fix her circumstances, okay? And then the third part of it is she blames God, blames Abraham, or Abram, and becomes bitter. Okay? So that's what her cycle of disappointment looks like. Defined by disappointment, tries to fix circumstances, blames, or becomes bitter. All right? That's the disappointment. And one of the reasons I want to show this, and I'll show you another diagram in a minute here, is that I don't think this is just Sarah? I think this is similar to our cycles of disappointment. When I thought about myself and friends, people I know, I feel like these are the steps that we often go through too. We become defined by something that's not working out in our life. We try to fix it through whatever means that we can, and then we blame people or become bitter. I think those are really big temptations for us. So perhaps we let the words that someone has spoken define us, or we scramble to make things happen. So we might take a job that's a bad fit or date the wrong people, or we might let bitterness or insecurity grow. We might become insecure about some area of our life if it doesn't seem to be happening. So what I think the redeeming thing about the story is that the thing about God is that he wants to break this cycle and write a different story. So waiting doesn't have to look like this. This isn't the only option. And God is not surprised by our waiting, and he wants to meet us in it. So we're going to look at a few more scriptures and then sort of talk about a cycle of faith. So I'm just going to kind of yell them out. So if you guys could take one and we'll read them all just right in a row. So Genesis 12:1, who could read that? Sam, thank you. Genesis 13, verses 14 to 16. Okay, thanks. Genesis 15:1. Thanks, Hannah. 17, verses 1 to 2. Okay. Oh, okay, I got these guys right here. 18, verses 14 to 16. That'll be you. And then 17, verses 5 and 15. Someone read that. Okay, Sarah, thanks. You guys want to just read?
The last one, 18?
No, verses 5 and 15, but not in the middle, just those two verses. Chapter 17. Okay, great. We start us off.
The Lord had said to Abraham, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you.
Okay, great. We'll keep reading along. 13 is next. Yep, 13.
The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted.
After these things happened, the Lord spoke the word to Abram in a vision. Abram, don't be afraid. I will defend you and I will give you a great reward.
Okay, I think we're on 17 and 32.
When Abraham was 9 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty, look before me and be blessed.
Perfect, thank you, Benjamin. That's
then
great.
I will make my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers.
Thanks. 18.
46.
Yep.
Is anything impossible for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will come back to you, and in about a year she will have a son. Sarah denied it. I did not laugh, she said, because she was not afraid. Or she was afraid. But he replied, no, you did laugh. The men got up from there and looked out over Sodom, and Abraham was walking with them to see them off.
Okay, great.
No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I've made you a father of many nations. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarah, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai, her name is Sarah.
Okay, great. So I'm going to just show you this now, and then I'll take the board down. But I think there's like an alternate to this cycle of disappointment, which is the cycle of faith, okay? I like to draw diagrams here. And there's four parts to it. We'll talk about each of them. Favor, freedom, presence, and purpose, okay? Those are the alternative. Favor, freedom, presence, and purpose. Okay. So favor. So how do we see God's favor in the verses that we read? have so many thoughts on that. How do we see the Lord's favor for Abram and Sarai? Okay, great. So he says he's going to bless them and make them the father of many nations. Anything else? Any other ways we can see God's favor?
Give them all the land.
Yeah, he's giving them all this land, right? Anything else?
He's chosen them out of all animals.
Yeah, he's chosen them out of all the people. He's chosen them. And he's met with them. He keeps coming. So this promise is repeated six times. So six times God meets with them. And when you hear the promise, each time it gets a bit more detailed, which is interesting in Scripture. So it starts out pretty general, and then each time we add a bit more detail. So God has favor over Abram. And I think actually one of the reasons that people often struggle with disappointment and with waiting is they feel like waiting has meant that God has forgotten them. So if we're waiting, we feel like, oh, I might be on the B team or second place, or God has not paid attention to me, he has overlooked me. But actually what we see in these scriptures is it's the total opposite with Abram. He is being remembered and chosen. He's plucked out of the many and chosen to follow God. He's given a land, he's given promises. And we are too. All these things are true for us as well. So what I would say there in terms of favor is we can wait in favor. We have the opportunity to wait knowing God's favor is for us, as opposed to waiting, believing that we're less. So a second thing is freedom. So I'm just going to read chapter 18, verse 14. All right, and this is right after the Lord tells them again that they're going to have a child, even though they're really old. I'll start in verse 13. And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord?' So I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." So it's really simple, but there's nothing too hard for God. So I think when we wait, sometimes the weight seems really big and God seems really small, but I think we have the opposite opportunity to believe the reverse. So that when we see how big God is, we can be free from feeling too small for our circumstances. So it's the bigness of God changes our perspective on our circumstances. So we have freedom. So the third thing is presence. So I'm going to just turn to Genesis 15:1. Which is one of my favorite passages in all of the Bible. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward." So here Abram is, right in the middle. Actually, he blames God again right after that, but right in the middle of his waiting, and God says, "I'm your shield. I'm the reward. It's me. I'm the reward. It's not about the son, actually. It's not about the land. It's not about any of these other things. I'm the great reward." And I love that. So God's presence is our reward in waiting. And Hagar, too, who we also sort of started with earlier, if you know the story, she finds herself alone in the wilderness. And she says in Genesis 16:13, after the Lord appears to her and says, "You're with child, you'll have a son." She says she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." So she's seen God. She's seen the one that sees her. So she too gets to meet God, and Jacob as well. Each of the characters in our story, in some way, all these characters that are waiting get to meet God in a way that they would not have met him if they weren't waiting. If they weren't disappointed, they wouldn't have met God in this way. Jacob wrestles with the angel. Sarah and Abraham meet angels. Hagar meets the Lord. So the final kind of point, and then we'll just talk for a few more minutes, is purpose. So Genesis 12:1, which we started with earlier, which is the call of Abram. The Lord said to Abram, "Leave your country and your people and your father's household and go to a land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. So Abraham's story isn't just about him. It's about him being a blessing. So it's not just after the wait, I would posit, but through the wait, he becomes able to be a blessing. So if he didn't have that wait and that disappointment, he wouldn't be ready to be a blessing. So just kind of in the end of the story, God doesn't just change the cycle of faith, disappointment to faith, or the story, but he actually changes their names, which I'm sure you all know by now. So Abram becomes Abraham, and Sarai becomes Sarah. It's in Genesis 17. But then there's a really important passage added in that feels a little bit random in its placement, and we've already read it. Benjamin read it. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless." Okay? Some translations of that say, "Be perfect." Walk before me and be perfect. And the word, the Hebrew word for blameless or perfect is called ta-mim, ta-mim. It's spelled T-A-M-I-Y-M, ta-mim. And it's a really interesting word. It's actually a word that translators have had a lot of trouble with throughout history and struggled with. And it got translated blameless and perfect in most places. But most contemporary translators say actually what it means is complete or full or restored. And it's really interesting because the image that was used with that was an image of something being planted, and planted in ground and being restored. So I find that really intriguing that at the beginning of Sarai's story, we have this image of her, of something being torn out by the roots. So like her story is being torn out by the roots. And then here we are later, right at the end, right before she has her son, but she's still waiting. We have a totally different image. The image is of something being planted. So it's a really interesting kind of turnaround that through this wait, she's moved from being this person that is torn up, but to being a person that is restored and redeemed. So God is telling them, I think, even before the wait is over, walk with me and be fully restored. So God actually changes the way that Sarai is defined. He changes her literal name, but he's also changing her definition, her self-definition. So she's no longer this person that's torn out by the roots, she and Abram, but they're becoming people that are redeemed and restored. And I think that's what the Lord's been speaking to me these last few days as I've been praying, that there are words that if we believe them about ourselves, that would change everything. So there's a word. So you might, you know, we might be defined in one way, but God wants us to define us in a new way. So perhaps the word might be chosen. So if you believe that you were chosen, it would change your whole life. Or it might be the word loved, or the word holy, or competent, or that you have a purpose. Any of those words. But if you could believe that word in the waiting, it would change how you saw it and how you saw God. And so I think maybe in our groups we'll talk about that a little bit, if there's some word. But be thinking, is there some way that if I believe that about myself, and if Sarah, in this sense, and Abraham, God's asking them to see themselves as blameless and holy and restored, and that changes things for them. So I just want to tell you two really quick stories, and then I'll be done. So when I was in my 20s, I used to run marathons. I don't know what made me decide to run marathons. I never ran before that. I ran cross country 1 year when I was 14, and my teammates and I found out that if we ran through the forest the right way, we could like veer off and we could just like sit and like hang out for a while and then come back and end our run without actually having done the whole run. So I'm like that kind of runner. I skip the middle of the run so I can just hang out with other girls and chat with them. But for some reason in my 20s, I thought, well, okay, I think I'll run a marathon, a few of them. So there were two marathons that come to mind. The first one I ran with my friend Dana, and it was the Milwaukee Marathon in Wisconsin. And so I thought, okay, she wanted to run a marathon, and I thought, all right, that sounds interesting. I guess I'll do that. Which, again, I'm a non-runner, so I don't know what made me think that was going to be a good idea. So we started training for the runs, and it seemed like really long in the distance when when I planned for this marathon. It was like several months away. So we didn't really, you know, train that much for a long time. And then suddenly it was like 6 weeks till the marathon. And I don't think either of us could run more than like 2 miles because we hadn't really been training. So we started going running. And I walked a lot. I'd stop for drinks. We would run really pretty places. I was like, oh, let's run on the beach. It'll be much more exciting. So on the race day, I got to race day, and I got to mile 13, and I couldn't finish. That was it. My father had to come pick me up. I called him. I was like, there is no way I'm making it 26 miles, because it just wasn't even possible. Dana made it, and then like couldn't walk for like 3 weeks afterwards, because we hadn't trained. So we had this long wait for this. We had months of waiting for this event, and we didn't train. We didn't prepare in the waiting. Maybe I could have made the 26 miles. I don't know, but I didn't. So that's the first story. The second story is that I ran another marathon. Somehow after that first marathon, I thought I would do a second. It seemed like a good idea. I don't know what got into me. So I ran this marathon with my friends Claire and Stacy. And Stacy's a really hardcore runner. In fact, her dad was the president of USA Track and Field. So runs a lot. And so she decided that we were going to run this marathon, and she'd never run one. So months ahead of time, she like started sending us running posters like to put in our room. I got a book called The Quotable Marathoner from her, and we bought new shoes. But this time she was like, we are staying on track, and we were running. So maybe 9 months before the marathon, we started running. And we ran like only a mile at first, but we gradually worked up to running 4 or 5 miles. And then 8 miles, and then 10 miles. And then we started running every Saturday. So on Saturday mornings, we would run these long runs together. And we were doing it, the three of us were doing it together. And I started talking about myself as a runner and thinking about myself as somebody who runs. It actually, my perspective changed. I started eating like someone who runs because I realized when I ate like pizza before I ran 18 miles, I felt horrible. So I was like, okay, maybe I need to change this. And so my life kind of changed, and I got to the marathon and I actually was in the top 5 people for my age category, which is like a complete opposite turnaround from my other marathon of like not finishing. But the reason was because we were training, we were getting ready, and we were seeing ourselves as runners, and we were acting like runners, living like runners. Even though we weren't marathoners yet, none of us had completed a marathon, we were acting as though we had and running as though we had. So those stories kept coming up to mind as I was thinking about waiting. I feel like that's a lot like what waiting looks like. That waiting actually isn't sitting still in one place and doing nothing. Almost always we're actively moving as we wait. And I think that we have an opportunity, and our opportunity is either to wait, like I waited in the first race with Dana, which was to not do anything, and to actually sort of do the reverse of what I should have been doing. To drag my heels, to think, I'm not actually really a runner, and so I'm not going to do this. I'm going to walk. I'm going to sort of slowly make my way. Or we have the opportunity to train and to say, okay, I'm gonna wait actively, and I'm going to see myself as somebody that I'm not yet, but I could be. I'm going to take this sort of cycle of faith again, to wait with favor and with freedom and with presence and with purpose. And I'll add to that, I think it helps to wait with friends. So running with those friends, I think, did a lot for me, because we were pulling in it together and saying, okay, we're all waiting, we're all figuring this out, and we're going to see what happens. And I think actually that experience changed me, and it was something I thought about a lot when I was telling you guys about that time of being sick with Lyme disease. When I was sick all of those months and waiting, I remembered back on running that marathon and training and thinking, okay, you know what? I'm someone that can do this. I can get through this hard thing in the same way maybe that I got through the race. So that's really it for me. But what I wanted to do is, when we go to our groups, I just wanted to give you a lot of time to talk with each other about a couple of things. So first, what are you waiting for? So that question that you thought about yourselves, what are you waiting for? Second, what in your life has defined you? Could be disappointments, it could be achievements. So what in your life has defined you? The third thing, what would waiting in faith look like for you? So how could you wait in faith? And then the fourth and last thing is, if you had one word, that one word that could be spoken over you, that could redefine you, what would it be? And then I'd love if you guys could spend some time praying just over each other, okay? So if you could pray over each other, that they will be, other people in your group will be defined by what God has said about them and the words that God's speaking over them.